Welcome, one and all, to the Tiny Plastic People podcast. We paint them and we play with them, and we're here to tell you why we think that is great. I am joined tonight by JD.
Hello.
I'm joined by Rachel.
Hello.
And I'm joined by Tom F, aka Le Swordfish. How are we all doing tonight?
I'm very good.
Oh, not so bad.
Excellent. Tom, let's complete the small talk and then we can get on with the business of podcasting.
I am mildly blessed by Grandfather Nurgle, so my apologies if I'm sounding even more snotty than usual.
Excellent. Well, hopefully you don't infect us via the internet, because who knows what can happen on the internet these days. Right, let's get straight to it. It is hobby, things we've done, games played, etc. And I should also say that this is the podcast of the tinyplasticpeople.com website. If it's there, you can find it there. So that's going to be an exciting thing. If when you hear this, we may be there. You don't know. You may. How would you be hearing this if it's not there? That's another question. Anyway, so let's go straight into our hobby progress and things. And I'm going to start with JD. What have you been up to in your hobby, etc.?
I got the big Slaves of Darkness box. And
hell,
that's been
yeah,
like my big thing recently. So I've started painting a big demon prince. And I've not actually assembled anything else from that box yet, because I've been obsessed with the demon prince, because it's such a good model.
Very cool. How big is this demon prince?
You know the ghost keel? I'm just looking because yes. I've got one on my windowsill. It's about the size of that ish.
This is not helpful to me at all.
No. I think that also the question to ask is, which head did you put on your demon prince?
Oh, I went for the Zeench head, the bird head, because it's great. To be fair, all the heads in that kit are really good, except for literally the one they put on the box, which is awful, in my opinion. That's a bit harsh, isn't it? I just don't like it.
And how is it to like put together the kit? Because I heard there's lots of stuff.
It's one of those like modern GW kits where when it's all put together, it's really nice. But the process of putting it together is a complete ball ache. There's lots of bits where you're sort of dry fitting it and thinking and just getting frustrated, thinking, how does this go? What magic is this? Because it doesn't work. And then eventually it does work and it's fine. But it did take me a while to build that one model. But there's a lot of options. It's definitely a kit I'm going to buy more of. I've got tons of bits left over that I'm going to try and find a use for.
Very cool. Very cool. Anything else you've been up to before the arrival of the Slaves to Darkness?
No, I've just been keeping it. I'm trying to be good. Because I have been quite heavy recently of like buying stuff that I'm not going to paint, or having projects that are just sitting there for ages. Like all my Heresy stuff and 40k stuff is basically in a box now, and it might just live there forever. So I need to
wait
stop.
A glance.
Sorry?
Nothing.
The thing, I'm starting to come around to your way of thinking, Nesh, to be honest. I think you might be right about that.
I don't know what you're saying.
Okay.
Great, well, going well.
Well, that's it. We'll put them all on the shelves. Tom, what have you been up to recently? Things that Rachel would be displeased by?
Oh, deeply. It's all been space wars over here. So I have painted a lot more Imperial Fists for my Heresy army and took them to the Goonhammer Open narrative event, which was fantastic. They performed very poorly, but I had a tremendous amount of fun running around with my big yellow men. It was good. It was a nice narrative event with the narrative of the event changed depending on how much we lost by. We lost by quite a lot. I think the loyalists did not hold the line successfully at all. But we did manage to keep the same leader for the whole time. Apparently the traitors, as I understand it, they elected a leader at the start, a player that was in charge of their whole operation, and then changed that leader after every game, including after the final game. So they had more leaders than games played. you would think that lack of cohesion would have cost them something, but no, they absolutely walked it.
So do you want to explain a little bit more about the Goonhammer Open and like what kind of event it was?
So the main, as I understand it, the main thing of that event is a 40k tournament, which I wasn't there for. I was for the Narrative Heresy event. So that was 5 games over 2 days. Including a doubles game on Saturday and Sunday. That was for the Horus Heresy game, and so had very specific team loyalist, team traitor, with the narrative being that we were trying to defend the Hive Moon over the planet on which the Adeptus Titanicus game was taking place. So we were defending the outskirts of the Hive, falling back again and again in various states of disarray. Playing 5 games with like specific set out objectives, including some fun stuff to do with like characters. Characters earned honor for surviving games, which seems like the wrong way around to me. I think if you're if you're still alive at the end of the game, that's not very honorable. But that's because my main character was a Black Templar, so... It was a good time.
Very cool, very cool. Awesome. Have any been up to anything else before we move on?
So since then I painted Rogal Dorn. So to...
The big gold man?
Yes, the big gold man who leads the medium yellow men.
He came out very well, I thought.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that everybody said nice things about him, because I'm not entirely convinced he's what I wanted.
In a Primarch?
Just not come out quite what I was hoping for. I was trying for much brighter gold. No, I'm sure people have said lots of nice things about him. So, and I'm well aware that I am not a stellar painter, so I should be satisfied with what I've achieved.
Well, I saw him and I thought he looked very, very nice. I especially liked his face, actually. He did a really good job of the like hair and the face and things.
It's a good sculpt. He's got a weird facial expression, like
he's got a bit of a I'm smelling a fart sort of look about.
Yeah. All of the Primarchs have a bit of a pretty old woman look to them, and he keeps that, but I think it's, yeah, I was able to, looking at it now, I think I was able to get enough of that face out using pretty much just a wash and contrast and a little bit of highlighting, so
yeah, nice. Is there something which you would do again on it, seeing as you were slightly you took a while to like be happy with it? So is anything you would approach it differently?
I think I would try and push how bright some of the gold is. So it's a bright Vallejo gold that I can't remember the name of, Elfin gold maybe, with a watered down purple wash over it. I kind of wish I'd watered that down more or kept it more in the recesses, so that more of the gold shone through. Because I think, looking at it now, in the worst cases, there's fiddly detailed bits where there's quite a bit of wash, and it just comes across as looking a bit dirty, almost. And then dulls down the gold around it. So, I don't know, I could have been a bit more careful about that, perhaps.
Alrighty. Shall we move on? Who is next? I think it's Rachel.
Yes. What have I been doing?
I've been
playing lots of the new Warcry, which is good and fun. Turns out they made the game better, or at least different. And so I've been doing about a game a week, which is pretty good going, thanks to discovering a few people at work who also want to play it, and there's room in the cafeteria to set up a few people to play on an evening. So that's what you've been doing. Just having fun with my Horns of Hashut, in particular the one who has a flamethrower, because the flamethrower ability is disgusting.
This is the one that has like a bagpipe as a flamethrower, is that right?
Something like that. The flamethrower has a like an airbag sort of thing. Yeah. I don't know how practical or likely such device is.
It's wholly realistic. And of course.
But yeah, it's good fun. I welcome our new Hashutite overlords. What else have I been doing? Not much gaming, to be honest. Apart from that. Although I guess that's quite a lot of gaming, really. Like getting a game in a week.
Every week is.
Yeah. Even if it is a little skirmish game. Still pretty good going. And I've been painting. I can't remember what I was painting previously. I was doing ships. I painted the starter set for Kings of War Armada, which is a sort of fantasy Age of Sail war game, with these beautiful resin ships you buy for various fantasy factions like elves and orcs and stuff. And so the starter set contains a bunch of human, very fancy human ships, and orc ships, and they both very aesthetically different from each other. A lot of fun to paint because just cool models, and I was able to sort of zero in on a fairly easy color scheme for both factions and just blast them out. I have not played the game yet. I think I need to get someone to learn it with me, because my attempts to learn it on my own were not particularly successful.
What sort of flavor rules of game is it? Is it on the scale from like easy to play to Drew? Where is it?
It's not Drew core, I don't think.
You don't need to get the flags out.
No. So it's based on a sort of I don't know, Caribbean themed Age of Sail game called Black Sails, I think. So it's basically the exact same rule set, but with a slightly easier or different, simpler rules for wind. Like, there's the option to play for with actual wind rules, where like you can't sail into the wind. But yeah, apart from that, it is more or less the same rule set. And yeah, it's pretty simple. Like, you move your ships, you have to like think about how fast you're going so you don't crash into things, and you can only turn by so much when you activate a ship. It seems relatively straightforward. It's just like a lot of games, like very difficult for me to pick up on my own, so I had to invite someone to come and take control of the humans or the orcs and learn to play the game with me, because I think, I don't know, maybe I have room for a game about ships in my life. Maybe. And there are certainly like a lot of ships in the model range that I really like the look of. Like the salamander
really
ones. Oh, they get really big. They get so like they're both because they're resin and because they're quite big. Like the biggest ones are like, you know, like the length of your hand, more or less. Like they have like a really satisfying heft to them. So you can get really big ones, and then you get these tiny little ones where there's like two of them on a base as well, which are extremely cute. Yeah. And right now, hobby-wise, I am painting a chimera, which is a three-headed beefy. Yeah, I've kind of just been making it up as I go along. He's all purple and blue and red. It seems to be coming together. It looked really bad for a while, but I'm having fun.
You were just approaching this one like vibes only, weren't you? Just...
Yeah, I didn't really have an idea going in. Like, I just kind of framed it purple and I was like, now what? Yeah. And I think that's me.
Very cool. Well, that leaves me. And I just want to put the question out there. Does buying things count as hobby?
Yes.
I hope so.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. That means I've actually done some hobby.
I'm going to say no.
No,
I'm going to take the contrarian position okay. on this one.
Well, then the only thing which I've actually
this one.
Bought or at the very least done tiny bit of hobby in is I purchased from one of our fellow role modelers the Imperial Navy breeches from the Into the Dark box with the intention of, for some reason, turning them into Skitarii. I was going to do some kind of kit bashing with them. I don't know why. It just seems to be a thing I do. But I got about halfway through and I got really frustrated with them because their arm sockets are different from nearly every other model which I've put together in that they're these little wedges underneath the arm, so the arms don't have like a flat fitting surface to go on.
Right.
Yeah, absolute straight up bullshit, to be honest. So
so they went back into the dark.
They went into the dark, which is a baggie, which is now on top of my wardrobe, which I will return to when I have time, because I thought it was going to be quick and easy. Turned out it wasn't, and then I therefore decided that I didn't want to do it. So, had other things to do. But, that said, I did do some gaming, and I actually did more gaming than I ever have done in, like, the last year, I think. I'm being slightly distracted by my cat, which is sitting on the table looking at me. Like it's going to bite me at some point.
But, wait, which cat is it?
This one is Tofu. So gently turn the camera around.
The baby.
You could tell because you can't hear the table creaking.
Oh.
Oh, baby.
Oh, yeah. Sweet. Tofu looks ready to smash.
Goblin energy there. Anyway, returning to gentle. There we go. So I get for doing things on the kitchen table. Anyway, everything's a mess. Yes, I did some gaming. So the gaming was I went to a 40K tournament, and this leads on to our first topic of the episode. But before then, I will gladly report back that I had my ass repeatedly handed to me at this 40K tournament because it was a proper, Brothers in Arms in Firestorm Games in Cardiff, run by some lovely folk, South Wales gaming group of some kind. I can't remember their name. Maybe I should look it up. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes. But it was 40 to 60 people, I think. It was like a team-based tournament. And I brought my AdMech, and at the moment, AdMech are not the meta choice compared to many of the armies which I faced. And I lost 5 out of 5 games which I played, which was good, which is the standard, I feel. But my teammate...
But that does mean you can say you went 5-0, though.
Yeah, I went 5-0.
Yeah? Nobody's quite sure which way around those were.
Yes. The things that defeated me, which I can reel off, was a incredibly tough Eldar list, which literally swept me off the board in 2 turns. Doing all sorts of kind of elf bullshit. My second game was against... What was it against? Chaos Knights. They walked across the board and removed me from the board, including a spectacular... So I was using the Sulphur Hounds, the robots on dogs, and the Skirmish, not the Sulphur Hounds, the Cerberus Raiders. They have a stratagem, which means that if you get charged, you can play the stratagem and you can immediately move your full move in any direction you want to. So you can basically screw up someone's charge. So they got charged by a big Chaos Knight. I moved them backwards, and then they immediately got charged from the knight which was walking behind them because I wasn't paying that much attention to what was going on at this point while I was being removed from the game. I did destroy one knight in that game, though, and the guy actually seemed a little bit pissed off that I managed to do that. So, little victories. Then there was one more game, which I've probably blocked from my memory. I didn't play any Space Marines. That was my main goal, was to play against lots of different armies. That's it, I played against Drukhari. I got removed from the board, but at this point... and in fact, I had a tournament learning from this one, was that sometimes if people are trying to do like specific strategies on you and they feel like they should be able to win the game and you refuse to die and do some ridiculously good luck, it's actually quite annoying for them, which I quite enjoyed, personally. So what occurred in this game was Drazar, the Blender Man, who is an elf with lots of attacks and wounds and things like that. Somehow, my tactic throughout the whole game was that I was playing the Lucius Admech faction, Forge World, and some of their tricks are that you can teleport units around, or you can do a teleport move, which is quite rare for an Admech army, because that's kind of a weird thing to do. And my general tactic had been... teleport my Castellan robots somewhere and then charge them into a fight, because having three robots run into you with like twos to hit with power fists is pretty tough, and it was like the one thing which I could do which was actually quite dangerous. But in this game I was going to do it, then I decided not to about halfway through and just walked them down the middle and charged into combat with Drazar instead, and then I punched him to death and rolled like just an ungodly number of sixes on mortal wounds and things. He hit me back because I didn't quite kill him, and all of my saves were sixes, and all of your saves for Castellan robots on sixes put mortal wounds back on you. So he killed himself in combat with me, and I thought that was really funny. And I was just like, oh my god, what a fun narrative thing to happen in this game. The guy
did he start laughing?
I was like,
exactly.
I was like, what? And he was just not happy that this had actually happened. And it was just like, oh, that's really like horrible. Like, you shouldn't have been able to do that. And I was like, oh, but I did. And it was fun.
Didn't realize I needed your permission.
No. Do you want me to call a TO?
Well, yeah, but anyway, but yeah, I still lost that game. I still was removed systematically again from the board, although also he had no ranged weapons in his list, so I had my Admech flyers, and I was just moving around the board at the end of the game. So if you want to get to round five, just fight a close combat army with flying units, and they can't touch you. It was quite fun. I fought Custodes. I had actually a really good game with them, like... lots of tricks, but I'd be eager to try fighting them again now that the new data slate is out. I might have been able to do a lot more to them by just wounding them easier, because you just couldn't get wounds through on them.
Yeah.
And my last game was against Imperial Guard, and I had a really lovely game as well. Really nice time, despite, again, being systematically removed from the board over a period of turns. So that was my tournament experience. It wasn't very narrative, and that was the thing that I knew it wasn't going to be, but it was the shocking thing was like the lack of, I don't know, like people just didn't even engage with the game on a narrative front, which I found quite different, which will be my feedback on that, because that's basically where I come from, is like, haha, my robots have punched your person, isn't that funny? They must be crushing it or something, and person just like blank staring back at you,
numbers should have done.
Yeah, lots of people saying, oh, statistically average that you did that, which is really disappointing, and also I don't know what the statistically average is for doing most things. So anyway, That was my experience at a tournament. It was fun. I'd actually go back, which leads me onto the first topic. So I had my ass handed to me, and it turned out that I quite liked it. Maybe I'm a masochist. I don't know. But as I said to my teammates as I was leaving, I was like, I would actually do that again. I feel like I learnt the game more. It is a very different game when you play it that way, and it's an exciting game in its own right, which I wasn't quite expecting. I was just thinking it was going to feel numbersy, but I liked the amount of terrain that was on the boards. I liked how fast the game actually moved when you play it that way. And also, a lot of the interactions are a lot simpler than they seem if you're taking the time to... If you're almost like taking time to play narratively, you might be making unoptimal decisions or something really boring like that. But a lot of those decisions are like... That decision might be like, oh, I'm slightly in cover now, but oh no, you can shoot me, etc. And then you have a debate over how many people you can see in a unit or something rubbish like that. This wasn't that. It was just like, you can see that, you can charge out of that, you can't be seen there, that does this, that does this, that does this, play the game. And it was quite refreshing to play 40k in that way a little bit.
That sounds good. Like, the rules are kind of getting out of the way and letting you play the game. Like, if anything, that's kind of like what I want from a narrative game.
Yeah. And it let narrative happen. So I think that if the games had been more pitched narratively, which they weren't because it wasn't that type of event, but if it had been a more narrative event, those fun things that could have happened could have been the things that were actually the things which you actually talk about later, rather than just like, oh, I trashed that guy, I trashed that guy, I trashed that guy, beat that guy, oh, that was a tough game. Not like, lol, rolled all these dice and they were sixes and now you're all dead. Ha. So that brings me on to the question which I had, which is, what hobby thing did you actively reject for a while until you actually did it and then you had to kind of eat your words or at least go, oh, maybe I do like that? Pondering faces all round.
Personally, I've never had a wrong opinion, so I can't speak to this.
A good. Surely there must have been one. Is there a secret space marine in your house?
It's 11 o'clock. Do you know where your space marines are?
I'm still thinking. Well, you know, yeah. I'm sure there is something.
For painting the Vogel Dawn, I did try a bunch of things that I had not tried before. I don't really thin paint or blend or anything. I really am a very head empty painter. It sort of worked out. I think if I had really been thinking about it, I would have started doing those 102 level techniques probably before the model I wanted to do really well and try really hard on. So I don't know whether the fact that I'm doing this extremely basic shit for the first time is, and I'm not liking the results of it, is probably more that I just don't have very much practice in it. Probably more that than something's wrong with the technique itself. Right?
That makes sense.
I mean, I actively reject thinning paints still, unless I'm trying to do something.
Life's too short for two thin coats.
Oh, I fully agree.
I think also, going that way can maybe also, like, lead to some bad habits that make you kind of like a slow painter, right? Like, I just put some paint that was too thin on this guy's tongue, and it just flowed into all the crevices. So all of the pigment is... like the opposite of the place I want it to be. It's terrible coverage. It's bad. Just don't thin your paints. We need to go back. We need to return to the tradition of every model having an inch of paint on it.
Well, that's how you know it's painted.
Yeah.
I think it's an easy thing to say thin your paints, do two thin coats, but actually, like, I think a lot of that comes in from it's just a way of saying be more thoughtful about it, right? There is this specific thing you can do which will improve things a lot. But actually, if you're just aware of the fact that you need to be careful how much paint you're putting on the model, that will mm-hmm. get you a fair bit of the way.
Yeah.
Right? And it's, yeah, just mindfulness.
Yeah, thinning paints is also about, like, removing things like brush marks and being able to tell that something's painted,
yes.
like, because you slowly build up the pigment, blah, blah, blah. We all know why someone would do it. But to some extent, no one's going to show me something and I'm going to go, did you paint it?
Yeah.
Like, of course you painted it. It's a little model with paint on it. So, like, I don't really care about seeing brush marks on it because that's what brushes do on a thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, but then again, I'm quite an advocate for being painterly when you paint.
Yes.
Because that's just the way I do it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, fundamentally, I like having stuff painted more than I like painting. It's like... Like the people who say they get the euphoria from finishing exercising, I just think, well, I get it from not starting in the first place. yeah. So I definitely, I think I should pay more attention to that, should do that a bit more carefully, but also, like, it's fine. If I'm not trying to achieve the fanciest model I've ever done, then might as well carry on with what's worked for that so far.
It sounds like you're still actively rejecting this thing. If we were to go back to the initial question I asked you,
am I allowed to say I thought I would hate this? It's fine, but I'm going to make the active sensible decision to still not do it. Right? I tried it. It's not as horrible as I expected, but you know, maybe I'm not going to have it.
But also, nah,
it's got it. Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a completely valid thing. JD,
it's very mature.
So for me, it's also a tournament. I don't think I've been on a podcast since I did this. But back at the end of August, I think I went to Throne of Skulls doubles for Age of Sigmar at Warhammer World with a pal, and it was brilliant. Really enjoyed myself. I've always avoided competitive play of any type because I think what puts me off is hearing people talk about competitive play. I find it very, very off-putting because it's just the whole the idea that if a war scroll isn't going to win you the game by itself, then it's worthless. Like it's that sort of hyperbole that goes into it that really sort of gets to me. But also, I just don't think about games in that way. Like I'm playing it because I like the mind's eye image and I like the narrative of what's happening and all that kind of stuff. I'm not too bothered about... I'm never going to learn like all the edge cases that will let me win a game more effectively because I don't care enough. But I had a really good time because I think Throne of Skulls has a reputation for being a bit more narrative-led anyway. Not like, you know, it's not a narrative event, it is a comp event and it's matched play, but like I think it's a bit more chill than something like London GT. And yeah, it was really good fun. I think we and playing with a friend was definitely helpful. I still don't think I'd go to like a tournament where I was playing by myself. But yeah, playing with people and going up against armies that were built competitively and stuff, it wasn't as awful as I thought it would be. It wasn't awful at all. It was good fun. So I've had to shift my thinking a little bit on that. I mean, there's caveats. Like, I'm never going to play competitive 40k because that really does sound miserable.
Did I not sell you on it?
No. I think also like the conversation around competitive 40k is more insufferable than the conversation around competitive Age of Sigmar. I think because I just prefer Age of Sigmar as a game. It's just a better game. But like hearing people in like local groups and stuff talking about 40k when I visit Games Workshop or whatever, and it maybe that's to do with the people, but it is, yeah, sounds awful. So I'd never want to play it.
I think going back to me playing in the tournament, it felt a lot, actually, a lot more stripped back than I was expecting, because people understand the armies that they've created, but also they, and this is me assuming things about humans, is that why would you cheat in this situation, really? Obviously someone might do, and you might have a rules debate with them about something, or if you don't understand something, but I went in it with the assumption that I'm probably going to lose here. But also, like, I kind of know the rules for my army as well, and that's all I really needed to know, was to be able to point at things on the army and on other people's armies and say, right, that is the thing which I should probably kill, that is the thing which is stopping me getting my objectives. And there wasn't that much else I needed to know about every army. I just needed the flavour of the army to know what to do in the game. What I needed to do in the game was not die, but I didn't have any say in that, really. And also, you won't have any say in that. Like, it's even like the high level, like, I don't think, yeah, the higher level players, like, you're gonna lose half your army. That's the point of the game, is you're going to do this. You've got to figure out which ones you need to sacrifice, which ones you want to keep alive, where you want your sort of tactics to come in and stuff. And that was actually quite refreshing. That was, it's like I didn't need to know that much, so yeah.
It was, but nice again, to play. Sorry, go on, James.
I was going to say, I just not played Age of Sigmar to that level, or played Age of Sigmar enough at all to sort of compare the two.
I feel like Age of Sigmar is less daunting as a competitive experience, because with 40k you've got stratagems and you've got secondaries, and Age of Sigmar match play does now have secondaries, but in a more limited way, I think. It was a nice experience, like, especially because I took an army that I've played a lot in the last like 2 years, which is my Stormcast. And I knew, you know, I went in knowing exactly how everything worked and what I needed to do in each game. And like the things I needed to prioritize and things like that, and it was, yeah, it was really nice. And I still do prefer playing casually with mates or playing Path to Glory or something like that, but I'm definitely open to going to the same event, the Throne of Skulls doubles at Warhammer World, because that was a really good time. But yeah, I think it was part of what helped was that it was a nice weekend away with friends, because I went with my friend from Yorkshire, and then there was a couple of people from our group, like Rich was there. So it was, more than anything, it was a nice chance to like hang out with my pals. And I think that helped sort of break some of the preconceptions, I think, because it felt more chilled out.
Cool. So back to you, Rachel. Have you found any flaws in yourself?
I mean, I can think of things that I do currently, like, actively or passively regret. I mean, reject. But I can't think of anything that, like,
you don't anticipate ever changing your mind on any of them.
Well, I somewhat anticipate like changing my mind about some of these things, but like I can't think of anything that I've changed my mind about in the past. It's a problem. So either I've forgotten what those things were, or like I've selectively remembered myself as always being a fan of airbrushing or something.
You've never changed your mind.
Yeah, exactly. I always thought this way. I was always enlightened. I don't know. It's
terrible. There been anything which you've been surprised that you liked?
Maybe big AOS battles, maybe. I didn't expect to like a full 2,000 points game, but it turns out it's not actually that much more of a commitment than a 1,000 point game, or even like an even smaller game. It's, and if anything, you get a slightly more interesting experience out of it. Like nowadays, I'll quite happily play a 2,000 point game, whereas I guess a few years ago, when I didn't really have an army at 2,000 points, I would have just been like, nah, I'm never going to do that. What a ridiculous idea. That's for people who like Warhammer too much. So maybe that's the thing. But maybe that's more of a sort of like evolution of
owning 2,000 points.
Yeah, you know, that's just becoming more of a hog than becoming a different hog.
Well, shall we move on? And I believe it just continues your streak, Rachel.
Okay. So my topic is organizing, like just getting people together locally to play a game with, either as a weekly thing or a monthly thing or one-off event, be it a tournament or some other kind of thing. Leagues. Why do it? How do it? My own personal experience here is that, like, back in sort of 2019-ish, I think, when I was really into Warhammer Underworlds, I sort of got a local regular meetup for that going at one of the friendly local gaming stores here in Edinburgh. And it was a lot of fun. And then obviously the pandemic killed all my enthusiasm for Underworlds. So yeah, I haven't come back to that. So now I'm kind of in this position where like I'm starting to like game regularly again and thinking like, what do I want to engage? Do I want to do this more seriously again, like I was doing before, where I was like actively trying to organize players in the city to get together and play the game together, or do I just want to continue to be a casual, as it were, and let other people do the hard work? So do any of you have experience of organizing a sort of local meetup at any sort of scale, be it just like a weekly or monthly hangout to play a game, or like a local community group or something like that, or even a big event or tournament? Like, I know obviously James, you've helped to organize the sort of Role Models events in the past, and I guess that kind of counts.
Does that count?
Yeah. it's internet people, you know, it's internet, not local people. Yeah, it's slightly different.
Well, I mean, first of all, why do you do it, seeing as it's on your
So I did it because, well, I wanted to find out new people to play with and play the game more regularly, because like Underworlds in particular, at least back in the day, probably this is still true, really rewarded like engaging with it a lot. Also because like otherwise there was no point in me buying everything like I did if I wasn't going to play the game at least once a week. I never got around to like organizing a tournament, like, although we did get like a couple of the local shops to run tournaments, but I never like actively participated in getting that all together, really. So I guess like I just wanted to play the game, and like it didn't look like there was like a community of players of this game all in one place, and it seemed like that was a good thing to do, and it was.
So I haven't done anything like this. I organized one of the All Outs, but I would imagine that doing it on a regular basis is quite different. Getting the same group together every week, you need, I think you'd probably want to, probably motivation is an issue, right? Especially with any kind of league or something, you'd have the issue of people lose interest over time. Does your setup allow for people dropping out halfway through, or do you want to, what extrinsic or intrinsic motivation are you giving them to not do that, even if you are running something that is something with a competitive aspect where somebody is going to be losing really badly, right? How do you keep the person who is doing the very worst engaged?
Wow, I hadn't even thought about that person.
Just ignore them until they go away, and then someone else is the bottom.
Yeah, I think like one of the things I wanted to do was like set up a ladder. I never got around to it, probably because you need to give people reasons to keep at it.
I think that that's definitely the thing that would worry me the most from organizing events, which I have done. I try and organize events which are just like one and done whenever I've done it, because I the sort of like the brain capacity of doing something every single like even monthly can be difficult, and monthly is actually probably almost has its own set of challenges, where it's just like motivation to do something every month is quite difficult to maintain for a group of people. But yeah, I think the risk of someone like on a weekly basis coming last is a big reason why I would avoid those kind of things, just to from a personal perspective. Like, I just don't want to engage with that kind of trouble. Over a weekend, someone's got to lose. Everyone's there to have fun at the very least, and you know, it's one and done. And afterwards you can think, oh, maybe we should do this again sometime, and then think about what that is. But on a weekly basis, that's a lot to almost commit to. Maybe that's just me being old and feeling old. Like it yeah. JD, anything to add?
Yeah, I've never organized anything really, just generally. But so I think my aversion to it is like, A, it's the responsibility of like organizing something, because I'm quite lazy. But also, like, I suppose the commitment problem plays into it, because the sort of thing that I'd want to organize is like a big like map campaign or something like that. That's the sort of the thing that in the rule books and stuff as a kid that always fascinated me, like the idea of having like a big map that you fight over and stuff. And like, I've got the 40k urban conquest box, which I reckon probably still works with ninth, and I'd love to give that a go, but it is getting the commitment out of people, because I've had so many woes with like RPG campaigns of just trying to get the same group of people together, even semi-regularly, is a complete pain in the ass.
It's hell.
So the thought of then saying, oh, well, can we organize times for pairings of people to get together over the course of a month with like to play 2,000 point games of 40k or AOS or something? I feel like that's like a way bigger proposition, that I don't. It's that thing of like, I'd rather avoid the disappointment of it falling apart by just not doing it. It feeds into our quite like, well, I say quite like, I mean really like, the way that GW games tend to handle campaigns now, which is where you've got your own thing, and like any game you play contributes towards that. You don't have to play with the same group. So like Warcry was like the originator of it, right? Kill Team's got it, AOS has it, 40k has it. You know, and it's, I like those systems for exactly that reason, because it doesn't require that sort of big commitment from a group of people.
And you can still care about and be invested in other people in your group's progress,
right? Yeah,
definitely. Because, you know, it's cool to do the post-game stuff with the person you played against, and, oh, look, they got a cool new item. Or, oh, no, now they've got a cool sword that makes them do more damage. That's going to be a problem in future games. Mm. That sort of thing.
I think there's an element of, it's a bit, unfortunately, like exercise, where you have to start small and build up a little bit in yourself to be interested in keeping those things going. Like, no one goes from couch to 5k in a week. No one goes from 5k to running a half marathon in 2 weeks, because that's silly. You hurt yourself and you would exhaust yourself if you do that amount of social stuff, particularly now in this sort of like post-pandemic malaise which has set in across a lot of people, like getting out and about again. Some people love it, some people don't, and having a slow ramp in to having social events on a more regular basis is a thing that takes time and to get used to. So like my work, we do like a board game night every month, and the only thing which we stipulated as part of that was if we miss a weekend, or like we miss a week because we're all busy and it's the end of the month, we will just try and do it the week after and then just say that that was that month and then carry on. Because if you miss a month of a monthly thing, it's suddenly like 3 months and you've not had a chance to like just blow off some steam and sling some dice around or learn a board game or something, or just like relax in that way. So that's my only sort of like, how would you do it? Just like do it slowly if you want to, and probably find people nearby to do it with, and maybe
also get practice.
Yeah.
Cause...
Yes.
Get good. Yeah. There you go. And why do it? I would say because it's fun. When you do it, it can be incredibly stressful. So the like just me and Drew and I is the correct term of saying that. We've been slowly recording like our planning for like the next narrative event, and just like having a catch up every few months about like how it's going. We haven't done it recently because it's just been very busy. That's been quite nice. So maybe in the future we will unleash that upon the world, which is basically just two people having a slow breakdown while they try and like herd people around. But that in itself helps focus when you're planning something a bit bigger, that you're going to have like an opportunity to do some recording or just a chat about how it's going so far, a bit of like therapy for each other or something along those lines. And having someone to do it with really helps, particularly if you've got ideas and you need someone to tell you that your ideas are dumb, or that your ideas are great, or your ideas will cost a lot of money. So those things really help. So if you are wanting to organize something off your own back, might take some time and it's going to be like a one-off thing, then yeah, thinking about, find people who would help you do that and build people into the support mechanism and infuse the people who want to take part, so that they actually take on a lot of the burden of making sure that it's a good event, because they want it to be a good event, you want it to be a good event, everyone wants it to be a good event, therefore should equal good event, question mark, we'll see.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. There you go. And that's like preamble. That's probably the first time we've actually talked about it on the podcast. I can't remember if we have or not. Anyway, more coming soon. Shall we move on to Tom?
Oh, go on then. So I have a bit of a question, people. I don't know if you've seen, but Twitter exploded.
Did it break?
The world's most divorced man purchased it. And has made a lot of very clever changes. And so there's a lot of people who are saying they're going to leave Twitter. There's a lot of the implication is that Twitter itself might stop functioning properly or become overrun with increasingly divorced men. So what do you folks do for hobby social media? Where are you active? Where are you posting and reading? What do you look for in that kind of space?
Who wants to say Discord first?
I think definitely like over the last few years, I've learned the value of having kind of like a slightly more closed, intimate. I am based community. Sorry, I'm distracted by a bug. Over, like the big pond that is Twitter or Instagram or whatever. Like I hardly ever post hobby stuff on Twitter nowadays because I can just put it in our Discord and everyone goes, "Ooh, that's nice," and that's all I need apparently.
That is it's largely the same as well. Like it's that thing of I could put this on Twitter where it will just go into the void and just get buried underneath, you know, I don't know, a billion tweets about, I don't know, Suella Braverman or whatever. Or I could just put it in Discord and have my mates, whose opinions I actually care about, say nice things about it. And that's all that really matters to me. Well, you know, I'm not that arsed about getting the Twitter likes or whatever. I put stuff on Instagram occasionally, but even then, that's mostly for either people who are already on the Discord or like mates of mine from real life who are interested, and that's about it. But yeah, it is the Discord for me. That's the main, sure, by far the main place I do hobby stuff.
Yeah.
And I should say, when we're talking about the Discord, there is a Discord which you can join, which is called Role Models. And you can find that via the link on the Tiny Plastic People website, if you can find the Tiny Plastic People website, of course. So you can join us there. We are lovely folk. And
join
we
us.
Want to see your models, basically. We want to see your things. And show us. We want to show you our things.
We're all just a bunch of hobby hogs.
Big hogs, and we will never stop enabling
each other. I guess that these bizarre things people have said go into my next point, I guess, which is if you are joining this kind of space, how do you, like, okay, any idiot can post an Instagram tag or tag Warhammer community on something or follow a Twitter account.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's not the same as joining a community, right?
Yeah.
Which is the bit that I would find challenging, is if I did not have a hobby Discord, I think I would have difficulty going into one and trying to make a bunch of friends in there, right? It's they're
learning
much more
all the
learning
contrived in jokes,
all the fucking emojis mean. so I guess that's, it's all well and good that we've got that, but
yeah,
this is not a rhetorical question to make you feel bad. This is a genuine question to hear the answer to. When was the last time that people did that, and how did it go? What did you do to make it a success?
That's a harder question.
You see how that is.
It is.
That really isn't a rhetorical question to go.
No.
So
it's genuinely like the problem with closed communities, and you've already talked it through. Like it's a shared language, a shared sense of humor, a shared sense of values, and understanding of the social norms, even though it's just text. And I'm sure you've seen it in many servers when someone comes in and doesn't quite fit the structures that have come up, and it is incredibly painful occasionally to see it happen. And you don't, like, for me as a painfully awkward person, watching that happen is like just the definition of that's what the kids call cringe. So it's like
watching David
Brent
do
to
a
be
dance.
Yeah, you don't want to be that person either. Like, you want to walk into these communities and obviously feel like you're at home and welcome to post. Not that you're the life of the party or anything. You don't want, well, some people might want that. They want to walk in and be the Don. But even like those first few posts which you make, like, "Hi, I'm here. I've got Space Marines." like, that's a big step for people, and to know you're in the right place to do it. And I'm part of several communities which I have not posted in because of that. Yes. Like, I've accidentally joined them via, like, supporting something via Patreon or something. Or, yes. Like, I just joined because other people I knew were joining. And that's how I find them, usually, yeah. is that other people talk yes. about them on one Discord and you join the other Discord.
Yes.
And a few times it's been like, post a couple of times and then go, you know, I don't actually have time for this.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, I think that you've got to bear in mind that you really only have time and space for like one friend group yeah. like this, I think.
Yes, I think Maybe. That's the thing. I see some people with like, when you like see a screenshot of their like Discord and it's just like server in folders. And it's like, what?
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't feel seen by this at all. What do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, not that you don't need... As I've discovered each time a member of the royal family has died recently, it's great to have a bunch of different communities with different levels of spiciness of joke to send to. But, yeah, I think that's... To me, that's the distinction, right? Is that Discord is going to a party, whereas... what I'm looking for is to go and see a play, right? Or watch a film or something, right? It is a much harder place in which to be a consumer. Especially yeah. since a lot of Discords like announce that you've entered, so you can't sneak in. It's like trying to join a party and the bell over the door rings and everybody turns to look at you and like...
yeah.
Possibly I'm just describing a particular level of my own social anxiety here, but yeah.
I think one thing which is about particularly the community which we post a lot in, the Role Models community, find it at turnplusthepeople.com. It is actually still quite a small community still.
Yes.
And it feels busy, like it's a very active community, which is fantastic. But I have joined a few which have been... like not a few hundred people but like a few thousand people yeah, and it's a very different vibe and it's just too much to, like for me it's a little bit too much. And just thinking about that is like there are other social media like platforms, and obviously in the last few weeks people have been joining like Mastodon and things like that. Yes. But even then they ask you to find a community which you want to be part of, and you already have to identify as part of that.
Yeah.
And it's not a hugely as big a deal as it is on Discord, but
I think that's kind of the thing that was so like mind expanding about Twitter, at least in the early and mid years of myself using it, was just like the discovery.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Of different people and subcultures and yes. stuff through it. And you can't do that if everything's in Discords and Mastodons and Toots and whatever.
I think that's going to be the biggest shame from this whole meltdown, is that I really do value a lot of the friendships which I made on Twitter like
yes.
5 years ago. Like, it is the one platform I kept. I don't really like Facebook. I can talk to my mum anytime. So... and I didn't like groups on there, and I didn't like other things about it, and it's Facebook. But Twitter always felt like the place where you could kind of slowly just like start following people, start responding to people, and that was a really nice thing about it. Not from a hobby, like I found it from like other perspectives as well, from like learning about accessibility, learning about design work, learning about music was actually the reason why I joined in the first place, and it actually allowed me to navigate all of these things. Video games.
Sorry, I just dropped my camera in my wet palette. It seems okay. Sorry.
That's fine.
Keep going.
Like, yeah, it's going to be a shame for that to go, and that opportunity for that is kind of there on Instagram, but is it because of the way the algorithm works and all the bullshit? Etc. Cool. Well, we've killed Twitter, so shall we move on to our final topic?
Sure. So like I was thinking about like kit bashes and conversions earlier. I just wanted to know really, how often do you do kit bashes? Like, do you do them for every unit? Do you do them for just heroes? How far do you go with them? Do you do like crazy stuff? And what's your favourite one that you've done?
I'm going to stay quiet for a bit.
Quiet while you decide which of your children is your favourite.
Yeah.
I do a fair bit of kit bashing. Usually try and do something special for heroes and find that it's one of the parts of the hobby I enjoy, even if it's just mixing and matching different bits of a space marine. I think the one I'm trying to think I'm proudest of, looking at the wall to see if I can think of something. I've got some Imperial Fist characters that I've kit bashed together using lots of the Vanguard veteran bits and the various things.
That's an excellent kit for bits.
Yes. Yeah. And I also hacked together some Phalanx Warders. So they are guys with Space Marines with shield and axe and gun. And so I tried to get some different poses, different setups going with those. Using the standard kits and different mugs of armor and some spare parts I had lying around. I think those turned out quite well.
And what drives you to kit bash these models?
I like having stuff no one else does. I like let me try and come back to that one in a way that doesn't make me sound like a shit. I do. I like a sense of
humor. You're going to buy Twitter next, aren't you?
Sometimes. I like that, just to look at an example now, I've got a Herald that is a banner from one kit crossed with a rare Forge World hero, and I think that's fun. I'm sure somebody else has done that somewhere, but I'm probably not going to run into them. So I get this model that is unlike what somebody else is going to be running, and it feels a lot like mine. I've got, as opposed to God bless them, but I'm sick and tired of those two Praetors. they're lovely models, but I feel like I've faced one or other of them in every game I've played for a while.
I don't think I've seen a single one of those that wasn't kitbashed, though. Although maybe I'm not. Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah, they're a good example, I think, of how if you value uniqueness in that way, there's lots of stuff you can do about it, right? If you don't, then more power to you. But if you want this stuff that nobody else has, then that's then I think kit bashing is a really good way to do that.
I think I should do more kit bashing. It's really not an area of hobby that I feel like I've done enough of. Like the one kit bash, like serious kit bash I can think of is like the Secret Santa Lord Relictor I did once. It came out very well. And that turned out that was quite a lot of fun to do. So
is that the one
I'd love to do more of it, but I'm also someone who quite enjoys the way the model builds out the kit normally. And I guess I don't have quite the same drive for uniqueness as you do, or at least maybe I prefer to try and express it through paint. Maybe. In conclusion, I want to do more.
I think you should.
But don't quite have the motivation for it.
I think it'd be rad. That's the main thing.
Yeah, because I do not strive for uniqueness in paint jobs. I absolutely just try and match together existing existing schemes, existing colours.
Yeah. So JD, before I talk about robots, would you like to say what brought on this?
This is your last chance to speak for the next hour.
Mostly what brought it on was A, thinking about Secret Santa, because we're currently in the depths of that at the moment in the Role Models community, but also the fact that my kitbashed Chosen for Slaves to Darkness have been sat at my desk for the last month. And I was just thinking about like how much I like them, given how simple a kitbash it really was. And it's absolutely my favourite one that I've done. I've got more confident with kitbashing and converting in the last year or so. Like being a bit bolder with like cutting models up, which is always something I was terrified of. But like my Praetor for my 30k Raven Guard is the Praetor with the sword, the new one, but with a bunch of like the Dark Fury Raven Guard kit bits. Oh, yes. So like the claws and the jump pack and stuff. And it wasn't particularly difficult to do, but it was a lot of fun. But yeah, and like my Chosen are Sisters of Silence, who actually, as it turns out, for a 40k kit have basically no sci-fi stuff on them at all, unless you give them guns. So with the swords, they just look like armoured people with great swords, which is an aesthetic I love anyway. And then I just stuck the Sisters of Slaughter, the Daughters of Cain, the alternate Witch Elf build, which is the ones with whips and masks. And I just took the heads from there with the masks and just stuck them on. And I just love them. Absolutely love them. My Slaanesh Chosen. But yeah, it's definitely something I want to do a lot more of. I try and avoid doing too much. I don't want to do entire units that are kitbashed, because that's a rabbit hole that I could really do without falling down. Because then suddenly that's buying 50 quid kits to go with other 50 quid kits to make one unit. But for heroes, I'll always try and do like a little something. Like my Lord Celestine for my Stormcast is Neve Black Talon with a different head and different weapons, which I'm really pleased with how that came out for such a simple job. But yeah, so yeah, definitely something that I'd love doing. Because yeah, I think Tom, you've hit the nail on the head, I think, for me, with like it's having something that, it's a way to express yourself and have something that's unique to you. Like I'm sure somebody's done Sisters of Silence with those mask heads before, but I've never seen it. It feels like it was something that I came up with myself. And I'm never, yeah, like you said, I'm never going to play against somebody who's got the same unit. So James, do you want to talk about robots and robots and boats?
I mean, I can't imagine spending, I don't know, what, like 50 quid on a unit and then like some more money on another unit and then somehow having less. But it's never been a problem for me. I don't know where this comes from. I'm gonna pivot slightly that one, yes, I love kit bashing things. I like making robots. Yes, I like AdMech, particularly because of this thing. You can read all about it on a website that currently isn't up, but it might be when you hear this. So
Twitter.
Yes, I will be there on Twitter. Maybe this is it. Maybe we've just been bought out and we didn't know it and we're all fired. So I think the thing, yeah, obviously about kitbash, just to echo Tom's thought that having something unique, but also I genuinely just enjoy building things quite a lot and putting thick kits together in ways that work that are slightly unexpected or maybe even like quite trad. I've seen kit bashes which I've done before done by other people because, you know, putting ranger heads on Dillac models looks really cool. Of course other people are gonna have done that, but they're still fairly unique. And I was surprised, just going back to the tournament, how many people also enjoyed kit bashing, even within the tournament environment, how people still enjoy the process of doing that. So I think it's just another facet of the hobby, really, and it's a part which I particularly enjoy because it is where you can be more expressive about the model itself. But to not prattle on about robots too much and not prattle on about things, the favourite kit bash which I've done is actually probably the Trog boss that I made for Rich, other pod co-host, last year for Secret Santa. I just loved putting that together. It was quite cheap. It was not saying that I skimped out, Rich, sorry. but I had bits around to make trogs. And it was like an opportunity to kind of like find like the just one body to base it off. So to build this trog boss, I had the Lord of the Rings cave troll, and I based it off that. So it's quite a small body, but a lot of the Age of Sigmar and old trolls and trogs have quite small legs, so it kind of fit together. So the only challenge there was to then build out the back of this this big troll to like encompass up to the size of the, not quite the size of the actual Dankhold trog boss, but something which is of similar height and stature. And that was quite fun. And then I had this like one perfect bit which I had found. I think it was the jaw of one of the squigs, the squig hoppers, looks like a crown if you put it on something's head. So that just kind of made the whole thing work. And just basically just having a load of bits in front of me, just sort of going sticky, 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 let's put this together. And then after that, just the next step was to just sculpt around it to make those bits flow together a bit. And because it's a big, horrible, mangy troll thing, as a sculpting challenge, that's not very hard. Or that's at least something which you can attempt without having to go full Darren Latham on something. So it was a real opportunity to like make flowing organic forms, kind of emulate some of the like the crustiness on the back, make things like I forgot what they're called, the horrible little shell things which go bleh, barnacles. Make barnacles, all sorts. It was a real opportunity to do that. And it was just great fun, and it just made one model, and I was really happy with it, and I was really happy to send it on to Rich because I was really pleased. I think I talked about it last year because I was really pleased with myself. But yeah, I think that is actually one of the favourite kit bashes I've done because it was just quick. It was just worked. I've done some things which are like big and took forever, and I've done things which have just sat on my painting shelf forever. Like I really enjoyed making Admech breeches from the Ogryns, slave Ogryns, and because to fit them onto the base, and I used these in a Heresy weekend, to fit them onto the base, like they look kind of lost, and then I just made little handlers for them. So there's actually two models on a base, and I realized that I really like the idea of just two models on a base doing the thing that one model should be doing. So yeah, that's kit bashing. I suggest everyone do it, and collect Admech, because that's how you get loads of parts. That's the other thing, is you need the parts to start, and it helps if those parts are from the army that you really love. And Admech is an incredibly generous army for those bits, and Space Marines are a generous army for bits. I find things like I've got a Custodes army, and that's not a generous kit, really. You can't make something else out of what's left over, really. You just end up with a load of spears and or swords, and the swords look trash, sorry. So
those big flat swords that look like you'd use them to get a pizza out of the oven.
The Admech stuff as well, I think it feels like there's no kit really, or there's no aesthetic that doesn't go with it. I've seen people, it might have actually been you, James, mix Admech stuff with Nighthaunt stuff to make like ghosty robots, and they'd look awesome. Like, and you can use, like, you could use old Empire bits, old weapons and stuff on Admech, and it'd work because there's something about that hunched robo freak aesthetic that just, you can just put anything with it and it'll work.
Yeah, I think they are the, this is just my opinion, you can say I'm wrong, of course, but they are like the most grim dark faction to me for that, in that you can just do gribbly shit and it kind of works. It like guilty, I've done Nighthaunt ones, guilty, I've done Empire ones, I've also done Cawdor. I've actually got some in front of me. I've used a lot of Necromunda, even like the Enforcers, and in fact the ones which I don't like so much bashing with are the more human things, so like the Enforcer kit and like the Vansar. You could say, oh, James would love those, but I don't, because they're not grivelly enough for me, they're a little bit too techy. But someone else could do an amazing army of like really high tech looking ad mech, I think. So you've got, or and you could mix in bits from like the new squats, the Leagues of Votan and things, because they've got more tech about them. So you could do like high tech ad mech, and that would be fun. Yeah. Anyway, I would prattle on about robots, but I'm not, because I'm sure that, you know, anyone could. Find me on the Discord, which you can find at tinyplasticpeople.com, and I will talk to you about admin. Right. Does anyone else have anything to slide in
about? Genovic bashing?
Yes.
No.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
For the narrative, the aforementioned narrative event, that's going to be a good opportunity to get some practice kit bashing.
Hell yeah. And that's Necromunda as well. Any of the skirmish games, I think, are like the perfect start for kit bashing. Or characters for your heresy army. Like, yeah.
I do have one of those.
I don't know. I
a secret heresy army.
Of course.
I think the various skirmish kits, the various skirmish games are good for kit bashing because you can do a lot per model, but just as a general warning to anybody who's thinking this sounds like good shit, I should give it a try, I reckon you'd actually have a much harder time with like a Warcry Warband or something, or one of those the fiddly fancy new kits, right? I think those would probably give you more difficulty than something a little more static and boring like a Space Marine, because particularly like spindly arms that line up in precisely one way are that much harder to chop and change. Whereas like you can cut a big armored glove off and stick it on in a different way and it works out all right.
That is true. Like,
but
even then, if you don't try,
yes,
you don't know.
Yes.
But absolutely. I think it starts easier, like going towards like this like Secret Santa season, to have an idea for a model and then like kind of consult a bits box about it rather than like investing too heavily.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I would never suggest anyone do silly things until they know what the, like, invest when you know you're gonna get the value out of it.
Yeah,
because otherwise you can end up with like not just shame in your pile, just like things where you're just like, I have no idea why I bought this, and I've cut it in half.
Yes.
So one have a bit of a plan, maybe.
One of very few models I have completely thrown away was the cool sorceress lady from the Dark
Hagar's Ravagers.
No, the Dark Oath. Underworld's band.
Yeah.
The lady with an eye in her hand.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because I chopped off one of her arms to put a gauntlet with a shield on it, and looked at that, and the glove was about six times the width of her wrist there, and I tried to fix it, broke it more. Just completely beefed it, and it's this model's gone. I've done it. I've lost it. And so no, did not turn her into a cool. I think I was trying to make her into a Dark Oath War Queen or something, and did not achieve that.
I do find smaller models harder to work with.
Yeah,
that's definitely something. So, JD, you're saying about Sisters of Silence. They make great. Lots of things, but making Sisters of Silence out of other things is really hard, because you've only got like one option to make them look a little bit like a Sister of Silence, and that's like the masthead. Beyond that, there's not that many kind of just blankly armoured figures within the Warhammer range.
Yeah.
Which is why the Sister of Silence is great kit for kit bashing with. But making, like, so the new Heresy, like, Imperial Army book has come out and has got, like, the Sister of Science army list and has got a shit ton of really exciting sounding stuff in there. But Sister of Silence have one plastic kit which have five poses and is now expected to make, like, 10 different units. So you've got to get creative with it. But looking at the current range of Games Workshop figures is really like, how would you even start doing this? So, like, Stormcast, they're too big. The Slaanesh ones,
Myrmidash like Painbringers, that? Yeah.
Myrmidash Painbringers, classic Warhammer name. They're big. They're too big. They're quite chunky fellas, so. Anyway, I could talk about kit bashing for a lot longer, but I think that's probably it, unless anyone else really wants to trigger me again.
If you want to do some kit bashing, there's a bunch of armies, particularly Space Marines, where you have like the unit of guys and then the unit of fancy guys, and just get some fancy guys to go with a couple of units of normal guys and just split the bits up and put them around.
There you go.
That's how I do
done.
It. Stern Guard, Vanguard, Chosen, I bet would work for this. I don't
Blade
know,
Guard?
Actually, maybe the Chosen fancy ones. Sorry?
Blade Guard?
Yeah. Blade Guard and Intercessors, that kind of thing, right? That's how I would... That's how I tend to roll, you know, Pathfinders and Fire Warriors, that kind of thing. You can figure out something fancy.
Cool. Right. Let's bring the ship into its harbour. So, how do we end a podcast? We end it usually by doing some kind of social media sort of chatter, first of all. So, you can find us on the Burning Pile on twitter.com at tinyplastic. Hang on, I've forgotten it. Tiny Plastic Pals? Is that us?
Yes.
Yeah, there we go. I remember now. You can follow us there. We will tell you when there's new podcasts and sometimes even new articles and sometimes when the website's live. We will also tell you to email us if you have questions for us to answer. We will debate them. If you talk about kit bashing, you will trigger me into talking about robots. You may also end up talking about Space Marines. You never know. You can email us at thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com. Google, it seems, is not sold on to the highest bidder yet. Where can we actually be found? We have mentioned the Role Models Discord. We think you should join there. That's where really cool people are, and we will talk to you about hobby. We will show you things like dragons. We will show you things like well-painted models. We will show you things like big, messy kit bashes, etc. So if you go there, that's a fun place to be. Let's go around. JD, where can people find you on the burning fire of social media?
I'm on Instagram as jd.paints.
Oh, it's a bad time to take a drink. Tom, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter and co-host as L.E. Swordfish, all one word, and on Instagram as L.E. underscore Swordfish.
What is co-host?
It sure ain't Twitter.
Cool.
Apparently, all I know is that when you write a post on it, it's called a chost. So I've made my prejudgment. It is not kind.
Look, I've been on Tumblr for over a decade at this point. I've got an inoculation. That said, the website called Pillow Fort is beyond me. It's okay. Seems a bit Tumblr-y. Come join us.
Cool. Rachel, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Nershly, NERSHLY, And I totally forgot to mention in my hobby catch-up bit that I released a game.
Oh my god.
I think that counts as hobby.
No, I'm not sure.
I didn't want to call you out on it because I assumed you were like deliberately not bringing it up because it wasn't finished or something.
I was just being dumb. You can go and read the rules for free on www.magewinds.com. It is a little skirmish game. Yes.
You should play it because it's brilliant.
There's online ways to play it. And you don't need very many materials to play it either. So you can play it with any model. So even a boat, I guess. So you can try.
Not sure how that would work, but you know.
Magic boat.
Yeah.
Everyone's boats now. That's how Drew would play it anyway. Anyway, go play Rachel's game at magewinds.com. You can find me on Instagram. It is alonemusicuk. That's easy. I'm also on Twitter at alone_music. I may still be there for a while. I don't know. Just kind of watching it like combust. It's quite satisfying in a strange way. Anyway, by the time this goes out, it's probably been sold on to someone else, Rupert Murdoch or some bollocks. Anyway, so yes, tinyplasticpeople.com, that's us. Thanks very much for joining me on this lovely evening. I've been bitten by a cat several times, so let's say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, Tofu.